Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's go over the Sanskrit in verse 1, and then I'll do the Sindhi in Sanskrit in verse 2, and then we'll unfold, okay? So repeat after me for the Sindhi. Parama Atma.
Parama Atma.
Advaya Ananda.
Advaya Ananda.
Purnaha.
Purnaha.
Purvam.
Purvam.
Swa. Maya. Swa.
Swa.
Mayaya.
Mayaya.
Swayam eva.
Swayam eva.
Jagat bhutva. Jagat bhutva.
Jagat bhutva.
Pravishat.
Pravishat.
Jiva rupataha.
Jiva rupataha.
So here, there's the, you can take this as two compounds from the starting at the beginning, Parama Atma. And if you break the compound going from the backwards, going backwards from the end of the beginning, Parama Atma, the self which is Parama, Desha Kala Vastu Aparicheda, not limited by Desha Kala or Vastu. So the Parama Atma, which is Advaya Ananda Purnaha, another compound. Purnaha means that which is completely full. Ananda means unfettered. Your nature, unimpeded nature, is the Ananda, that wholeness, that which is the most beloved. Advaya is non-dual. So Advaya Ananda Purnaha. So Parama Atma, Advaya Ananda Purnaha. All of these words are pointing to your own nature, right? So each word, in fact, is a lakshana, and all of the words are pointing to the same thing, just the satchitatma. So this is the subject of the sentence. So that paramatma, who is advaya ananda purnaha, purvam, first, before, at the beginning. You know, it's like an indeclinable. Like an indeclinable, even though it can be declined, but in this case, it's like an indeclinable. So purva means before or first, at the beginning. So we could say before the creation. That's how we mean it. Srishtehe prak. Before the creation, before this manifestation of duality, what was there? Only me. Only the self. The self is what? Parama Atma Advaya Ananda Purnaha. That self, which is my being, is all that was there before the creation came into manifestation. So that self, which was there initially, then swamayaya, by its own maya, the atma, by means of, third case, by swa means one's own, right? So if you say maya, swamayaya is the third case. So by means of one's own maya, in this case, since it's referring back to the subject, to the Paramatma, which is masculine, you'd say, by his own maya, okay? By means of his own maya. Or if I translate it as me, by my own maya, since I am that. Right? So then, again, so by means, instrumental, by means of his own maya, swayam eva jagat bhutva. Bhutva means having become. So, first you say, having become the jagat, but swayam eva jagat, having himself alone become the world. The Jagat is the whole universe. So having himself become the Jagat by means of his own Maya. See? So because the Atma doesn't become anything, the Atma is free from time and space, it's infinite, one without a second, non-dual, so it's not going to become anything, but because Maya is an incidental attribute of your own being, incidental attribute means it can't change or touch you in any way, because that's Swamiji's definition, Puja Swamiji's definition of mithya. Mithya, if I say it's good enough, as long as we really understand mithya, to say by his own maya, and you understand maya as mithya, then that's all that needs to be said. But that would mean maya being mithya brings about no change whatsoever to what is satyam. Satyam means that which really has absolute reality. And so this maya exists only in the self as an incidental attribute, as mithya, and the maya is what is responsible for the projection, the manifestation of the infinite knowledge, as Swamiji will say, the manifestation of the whole creation. So having myself, or having the Paramatma, having become himself alone, having become the Jagat, because maya, satyam plus maya, doesn't make two, right? That which is, there are two orders of reality. I should say like this, satyam plus mithya, these two orders of reality, don't make two. Because the one, mithya, has no independent being at all. It's 100% dependent on what is satyam. So Brahman, the self, your own being, is the satyam. It's of a different order of reality than mithya. Mithya has no being of its own. And so the only being that it enjoys is Brahman. And so therefore there's not two. There's not Brahman and Maya. It's like Swamiji will joke and say, it's like me and my shadow. That is not two. The shadow is totally dependent on me. It has no being whatsoever of its own. And it can't touch me or do anything to me. It can give somebody some shade, that's all. You know? And then you can, you know, have a conversation with your shadow, just like we have a conversation with our Ishtadevatar, whoever. So anyway. But still, Maya has no independent being. So then, Brahman, having become, we can say Ishwara, because once you bring in Maya, if I bring in Maya, because it's already just said Swamaya, you know, by his own Maya. So now I can say Ishwara, because we brought in Maya. So Brahman doesn't become the creation. Brahman just is. But with Maya, then you have Brahman plus Maya, that's Ishwara. As soon as you acknowledge the creation, or you acknowledge Maya, then Brahman, we call Brahman as Ishwara, because now we're talking about the manifestation of the creation. So that's that. That is Brahman with Maya. Brahman with Maya, taking Maya into account, that's what we call Ishwara. So we can say Ishwara, having himself become the Jagat, Pravishat, because Brahman plus Maya, having himself become the Jagat, then what? Pravishat, past tense, he entered, Pravishat, Jiva Rupataha, in the form of the Jiva. He entered that Rupataha, as, it would just mean as the Jiva, he entered as the Jiva, having become this creation, Bhutva, himself having become the creation, then now the creation is there, he has entered that creation in the form of all of the Jivas. Okay, so that's what we went over this morning. That bhutva, when you see that affix twa, bhutva, having become, like here, having become the creation, then he entered. So you'd have bhutva, having become, and then pravishat, he entered. First having become, then he entered. It's called an indeclinable past participle. So that's the... That first verse brings up in the from the commentator a little doubt. And his doubt is, I'll just say it in translation. He says, if the Paramatma, who is one alone, who is one non-dual, right? just one alone. There's not two Paramatmas. There's only one Paramatma. So if that Paramatma has entered into all of the shariras, one Paramatma enters into all of the shariras, then he says, puja, puja kadi bhavena, pratiyamanaha, oh, never mind the Sanskrit. What he says is, all these shariras are different. What about all the devata shariras? They're all exalted, uttama. They're all uttama shariras. They have in a higher lokas. They have all kinds of special gifts and powers. They have a tremendous sattva buddhi. You know, that they just really have to be told this knowledge because there's really no difference, substantial difference between one's own nature and the mind that has a high degree of sattva, antakarana shuddhi. And so they are exalted. It's an exalted birth. It's a punya bhumi, you know, punya to take this birth. And then all of these devatas are also, they are worshipped by the mortals, you know. And the mortals in this bhuloka, and mortals, human beings, and animals, and insects, and all of these are lesser upadis. They don't have quite as much punya. They don't have quite as much capacity. They don't have the level of antakarana shuddhi that the devatas have. And so this fellow's question is, puja pujaka. Puja means that which is worshipful, and pujaka means the one who's worshipping. All of these different kind of conditions, all these upadis, you know, and all of the different lokas, they're so different. They have all different capacities and different vibhutis and things like that. When that's so, we have these, what's called these uttama, these exalted upadis, and adhama, these lower upadis. Isn't that a little bit confusing when we're experiencing all of these different kinds of beings, when only one atma has entered into all of them? Why aren't they all the same then? Why aren't they all the same? Isn't that a contradiction? That's his doubt. Okay. So this next verse is answering this doubt, according to the commentator. Okay. Because all the commentators, including Shankara, they try to make, for clarity's sake, for the sake of the commentary, and for your sake, they're trying to keep a thread going between the verses. And so before each verse, they'll have maybe even one sentence. It could be even one word, like kinja further, you know. But it could be just a sentence giving an intro to the verse, or it could be a short little paragraph introducing the verse. It's just the link, what links the two together. So here's the verse. You've chanted it, I'm going to do just the sandhi. So Vishnu. This is a kind of a lot of nice sandhi here. So Vishnu. Adi. Uttama.
Deheshu.
Pravishtaha. Devata bhavet.
Devata bhavet.
Martya.
Martya.
Let me check something here. You know, in the yours, how yours reads is just devata bhavet. No, yours reads devata bhavat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This says devata bhavet, and so I would break the sandhi differently. I would say devataha bhavet, but you have devata bhavet, and so if I break that, it's going to be devata singular bhavet. So I copied this from another book,
yeah.
Like that one that you have, because I copied it from the one that has the English translation. So just to let you know, I was wondering why they didn't say devataha, that it wasn't plural. So I might translate, I'll translate this both ways. Okay. So here, so pravishtaha devata abhavat. Say that. Devata abhavat.
Devata abhavat.
Okay. Then martya.
Martya.
Adi.
Adi.
Adhama.
Adhama.
Deheshu.
Deheshu.
Stittaha.
Stita
Bhajati Martyatam.
Oh, Devatam. We have Devatam.
Can I see your translation? The other one? That one right there? Okay, it's my mistake. Very different. Just a minute. Yeah, it's got to be David Tom. So this book is wrong. This one here. Can imagine when you're just learning Sanskrit how awful this is. Because in these old Sanskrit books, you just have to have a lot of compassion, because when these books were put into print, they were used, I think I told you this, they had these little lead things, that little lead letters that they stuck in one by one, mm-hmm. you know. Very, very tedious, and so there's lots of, there tend to be a lot of typos, and the older the book, the more the typos. Because it's really hard to do that, to making those prints, or whatever you call them. Have you ever done that before? Actually, when I was young, that we were still doing that kind of thing, and I used to do some of them. Very tedious. And it's hard to double check it also. Anyway, so, let's keep it at, David Tom. Let's see what they have here. Okay, so so let's start again from the second line. Martya Adi Adama Deheshu Stittaha Bhajati Martya Tom. Okay. So what this says is Vishnu, Brahmaji, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, and then all of the different devatas, all that were like Ganesha and Saraswati and Yaneshwari and Dakshinamurti, all of the different devatas, and we had Indra and Agni and Vayu, so all of these devatas. So he says Vishnu Adi means beginning with Vishnu. Because Vishnu, this is another thing in the Vishnu, if you take the three major aspects of Ishwara, it's Brahmaji, not Brahman, so Brahma there is masculine. And so Brahmaji is considered the creator, the one who brings the creation into manifestation, that aspect of Ishwara. Then there's Vishnu who sustains, the sustainer, the one who sustains the creation, that aspect of Ishwara, now sustaining, that's the job, sustaining the creation. And then Shiva is the one who is responsible for resolving the creation, bringing it back into what we call Laya or Pralaya, into its unmanifest condition. And so Brahmaji has done, as Ishwara, Brahmaji has done the job once it's, can become manifest. And then Shiva will do his job when it's time to, in terms of this Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, then there's still devatas going about. But in terms of their job, Vishnu is the one who's sustaining the creation. And so in a sense, he is the manifest Ishwara manifest. And then is the Ishwara of which all of the which can, who is the container or the I'll think of it later. There's a word I wanted, but he's the one that all of the devatas are. We would say in one that in the Taittiriya Upanishad, all of them fear. All of them fear. They don't really fear, but they have a job to do. They have their dharma. All of the devatas have their dharma. And so they're, in a sense, like limbs of Ishwara. They have very specific dharmas. And out in the Taittiriya, it says out of fear, they do their job. The sun keeps its position. Everybody does their job out of fear. Out of fear means dharma. It's not really, they're not quaking in their boots. But that is their job, So, It's a famous verse. So they say Vishnu first. Vishnu Adi, beginning with Vishnu. Uttama Deheshu. Uttama means exalted or superior, you know. The highest is Uttama. So the superior, you'll often see it translated as the superior, the highest. So here he says, looking at this compound, Vishnu Adi Uttama Deheshu Pravishtaha. Pravishtaha means entered. So that means what? Brahman or Ishwara entered. Now reading this compound backwards, he entered into the Uttama Dehas, into the exalted Upadis, into the exalted bodies, beginning with Vishnu. Beginning with Vishnu. So if I say Vishnu Adi, you know, beginning with Vishnu, what that means is they're taking Vishnu as the first member of a set. So if I say Vishnu Adi means beginning with Vishnu, then it's including all the devatas, right? Like what if I said Chakshuradi, that's often say that. That's Chakshu, even though Shrotra is the first of the five sense organs. So I could say Shrotradi. They often say Chakshuradi for whatever reason. But it means all of that group, all of the sense organs, right? If I say for the Karmendriyas, and what if I said Vakadi, beginning with speech. So that's all the Karmendriyas, Pranadi, all the pranas. So that's how this Adi in Sanskrit is used all of the time to include a set, right? So here, that Vishnu Adi, beginning with Vishnu, what does he mean? All of the devatas. All of the devatas compared to the mortals and animal upadis, they are all uttama. They're higher. They're superior. They have more capacity. They're more subtle. They live longer. They have more pleasure, more ananda, because of much more ananda as natural to them because of the, it's a punya upadi, which you get through dharma. And so the mind has tremendous shanti. And so the mind, you know, the nature of yourself fills that mind. It doesn't have a lot of raga. You know, it doesn't have rajas and tamas contaminating it. You know, so that upadi is uttama. We'd much rather have that kind of an upadi if we can get self-knowledge. Okay, so Vishnu Adi Uttama Deheshu Pravishtaha. So Bhagavan, having been past passive participle, he entered into these superior uttama upadis, the uttama bodies, beginning with Vishnu, and then devata bhavet. He became a devata. So you have devata abhavat. If you have devata abhavat, he became a devata. So means, but that stands for all of the devatas. That's why we want it to be plural. So I was confused. Here it would be plural. It would be devataha bhavet. He became all of the devatas, because there's not just one devata. Even when he says Vishnu Adi, beginning with Vishnu, there are many devatas. So first having created the world, then he entered as a jiva. But first he entered, it says, not first, but he entered, that same Bhagavan who became a jiva, he entered first into saying all these uttama upadis and became the devatas. And then he says, marcha adi adhama deheshu stittaha. Then also, stittaha means remaining or just abiding or staying. Stittaha in the adhama, reading this compound backwards, marcha adi adhama deheshu. It says, then just abiding in the lower upadis, the lower bodies, beginning with the martya. Martya means mortal, the ones who suffer birth and death. So that when you say the martyas, you're usually talking about the human beings. So beginning with the martyas, because of the adhima upadis, of the adhima, the lower, less than the devas, uttama, adhima. So these adhima upadis, they say the martya first, the human beings first, but then come all of the animal upadis, and then you can go into the lower nataka, you know, the hell worlds, and the upadis that are there even are more awful. So then abiding In the just a remaining there in the Adhama Upadis, beginning with the mortals, then budgeti, it should be devatam. Is it devatam? Devatam.
Devatam.
Okay. Then what happens is, they budgeti means to worship. Budgeti has different meanings, but here it means then those mortals, they worship the devatas. Right? So the devatas have the punya upadi. And are exalted and have big jobs. And then the mortals have lesser upadis, and they become the pujakas. The pujakas are the ones who worship. The pujas, those who are pujas, are the ones who are worshipped. And so in the tradition, in the culture, Hindu culture, the Vedic culture, all of the rituals that we do as samsaris within the first portion of the Vedas, there's so many enjoined karmas. The karmas, when we say karmas are rituals. So there's all of these enjoined karmas that need to be done either on a daily basis. Those are called nitya karmas. There's two or three, there's a morning karma, the Agnihotra, if we're in the Vedic era, that is done in a fire ritual that's done every single morning. And then there's special karmas and rituals that are done in the morning, at noon, and the sandhya vandanam in the late afternoon. So these are enjoined upon you to do. And then there's what we call the naimittika karmas. Those are karmas that have to be done at specific times. Like, for instance, when your parents die, on the day of their death, there's a shraddha. That's different than shraddha. There's a shraddha karma that needs to be done in order to help your parents gain punya. You know, it's like sending up punya to them so that they can have very positive experiences and get a better next birth. And so it's imperative, actually, to the Hindu parents that their children will do this for them. It's not a little thing. The shraddha has to be done. And the children take it very seriously also. So in Swamiji, for his parents, there's four of them, so he had three brothers besides, and there's four boys. So they always, once a year before the mother died, they were always doing this shraddha karma on the day of his father's death. The father died when Swamiji was 8. So this is always a big deal. And Swamiji, when he was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, he's the one that had to do it because he was the oldest boy. Of course, people helped him. But that's been it's a very kind of important ritual. And then when the mother died, then that shraddha had to be done for her. And there was always, for all of the Hindu families, it's an event. It's an important, naimittika karma. It comes once a year. So there are other karmas like this, different, like Krishna Jayanti, and then Shiva's, the day for Shiva and all of these things. These all have to be, there's a lot of pujas and things that have to be done, and that's your dharma to do those things. So we become, and in doing all of those, we are invoking Agni, and we're invoking different Ishta Devatas and Devatas that are directly related to that particular karma. And so that's why when he says here, it might sound, we're the Adhama Purushas, and we're the ones who have to worship the puja devatas. Well, that's exactly right. The puja, the devatas, are who we invoke for our special needs, and who are responsible for certain laws and all of that. You can also do pujas to Ishwar in general, but most of the rituals are very specifically directed, and it's our duty to do those rituals. Once you become a jnani, or once you become a mamukshu, then you're into the second part of the Vedas. But he's just talking here about this creation coming into manifestation, and the Vedas, just in terms of, I would say, the tradition, the Vedas also come into manifestation with the creation. They come like breath. They come like breath into the minds of the rishis, who then chant the whole Vedas as the creation. These are the, it's a mythology, but it's important to understand that, how it's held. Whether you say, well, that's mythological, sure, doesn't make any difference. That's how they see the beginningless nature of the Vedas. The Vedas are giving knowledge, are viewed as giving knowledge of those things that your pramanas cannot give. First portion of the Vedas with all of the rituals and the Dharma and kind of the cosmology, that's all giving you indirect knowledge. Because how can you know what all of the different lokas are and how the creation comes into being and what karmas are enjoined upon you, and also the nitya naimittika karmas, but there's also the kamya karmas. Like, say you get so common, you're having trouble having a child. That's the putra kameshti. Putra means child. Putra kameshti. You know, your desire is to have a child, and so you get these, you do all of these particular rituals in order to invoke that, to fulfill your desire. Say you need to pass a test in order to graduate. All of these kami karmas will, that parents will do all of these kami karmas for you, you know, to bless you, to make sure that these, that you have everything that you need in order to be able to pass the test or whatever. So these kami karmas are all there also. And invoking different deities, there's karmas for your Ishtadevata. So it's a kind of a very, very rich tradition. The creation, Bhagavan, even in the Bhagavad Gita, when he's talking to Arjuna, I think it's at the beginning of verse 3, he said, you know, at the very beginning, with the manifestation of the creation, there are twofold paths that I've set before you. One is pravritti, one is nivritti. You know, talking about himself as Ishwara. So all of these understandings are there. And like that, the Vedas are considered so sacred as a manifestation of Ishwara. You know? Because knowledge also is beginningless. If the creation manifests, that's why Swamiji calls the creation as a manifestation of infinite knowledge. So that means, because everything that is here, rupa, nama is the knowledge, nama rupa. So here's all of the rupa, you know, infinite manifestation of rupa. All of that in its causal condition is just nama. See what I mean? It's all knowledge that becomes manifest. How much do you have unmanifest in your psyche that becomes manifest as you need it? So, just to give you a little bit of what the background here. So now, so he says, just abiding in these adhama upadis, beginning with the marches with mortals, then bhajati devatam, then one worships, then Bhagawan, in that, those upadis, worship the devatas within that first part of the Vedas. Everybody clear on that? So now, this is the answer to this initial doubt. And so what he says here in the to make this clear, he says in the commentary, these upadis, you know, these bodies that we're taking, like the uttama, the exalted bodies, and the adhama, the lower bodies, none of these are swabhavika. It's none of these are your nature. It's not like Bhagavan turns into the upadi. Bhagavan, the Atma, the Paramatma, remains exactly the same. The self is not becoming. He is the self. The Atma is the self in all beings. But he doesn't take on the qualities of anything within Maya. Just because if you have an adhama upadi, that doesn't mean that the Atma, that yourself, has now become lost stature. And then if you have a devata body, which you've probably had devata bodies infinite times, and then these adhama bodies, you know, infinite number of times, and you have a devata body, it's not that the Atma has gotten a promotion or, you know, gained more punya to now be able to have this particular upadi. Bhagavan the Atma is free of punya and papa. Is free of dharma and adharma. Is free of any type of change, you know. And so that's really free of guilt, you know. free of ahankara, free of all of the different levels and types of identification that are possible in this world, do not take place for Ishvara, for Brahman, for yourself. Because yourself is not an object in this world to have all of this baggage. You have to have an upadhi in the world. So the upadhis are all different. And you can say some are more exalted, even on this loka itself. Some are more exalted, some are less exalted in terms of their capacity and the kind of positive qualities or the positive living situation they get. Some people have much more than others have. But it's not that the self is becoming diminished or becoming exalted. The self is always exactly the same in all beings. Which is kind of, that's also, you know, that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi means where I see all of this as Ishvara, and I've seen all of it as Ishvara. This is all just the Maya Upadhi. Another way to say it is, all of this is really only myself. There's not two of us here. It's all of it is a manifestation only of myself, every single part of it. And so that being so, that, you know, it's so beautiful when you really kind of understand that, then these, you know, which is kind of the, what we call the sadhana dharma, the general dharma that is true for all beings, you know, makes so much sense. Because do unto others as you would have done to yourself, and don't do to others as you wouldn't have done to yourself. That makes so much sense on the deeper level, and the fact is there is only yourself here. So just treat everybody as yourself, the things, because that's the truth. Treat everybody as yourself. Give to everyone what you would want given to you, and don't give or do to others that you wouldn't want anybody to do to yourself. That is the Dharma. That's what it is. And since we don't have self-knowledge until we do, they just tell you in this way. You know, but it makes absolute sense. Of course we should do that, because everyone is ourself. So treat everyone as yourself, as you would like to be treated. Wow. What it makes me think of was Swamiji. I think when we were doing a series of courses, Swamiji started that first course in 1972, where we just sat for 3 years. It was the second one. He did three or four in a row, and then there was a little break, and then he kept on doing it forever. He got a few little break there, but I think it was the second one. And one of our students, a Western student, who was actually an Indian woman, but she came from the West, and she was a good student. Everybody was a good student, actually, but there was one boy that had a problem, and he apparently fell in love with this girl, and an Indian boy, and she was not interested. I don't know what went on. I don't know what went on between them, if there was some argument or if he was just felt rebuffed. But one night he went up to her room and stabbed her seven or eight times. Oh, so this isn't in the night. It was dark. It was night, maybe 10 or 11. And there was all of a sudden, Swamiji was a kutir. I was a guest at that time. Swamiji was here in his kutir. There were some sadhus and people here, and I was here. So Swamiji was over here, and this girl was in the girl's hostel, and people came running down. And so I remember Swamiji, I heard all of this, but I didn't know what was going on. He apparently, somebody came and told him, and he ran out. He didn't even take his shoes. He ran out, and they somebody came roaring up with a car, and they carried her into the car and ran off to the hospital, you know. And then he went every day, and of course, and spent time with her. And there was always, in India, you know, you're never in a hospital alone. That does not happen. So there was always an entourage of people and filling the waiting room and waiting and checking. But Swamiji would also come every day and spend time. And she ended up being fine, but with a traumatic event. And she's fine. She's fine now. She's in the States. She's doing really well. But then this fellow that had was one of our students who had done this. He apparently ran out of the ashram and he went down to the, there was like a big lake. This is at Purana, not Puranajati, it was at Powai, the ashram in Powai, Sandipani Sadalaya in Powai. So he ran down and he just laid there against this lake. And all the brahmacharis were running all over looking for him. Somehow they figured it out that it may be him. And they said something to Swamiji, and Swamiji said, yes, that's him, go find him. And I don't know why Swamiji, maybe he knew different things, I don't know. Go find him. So they ran all over, and they found him. And then they brought him back, and then the police came, and they took him to the jail. And he had to stay in the jail, and he went through the trial, you know, and all of that. And then I think he spent some few years in the jail. But you know what? Swamiji went and visited him in the jail all the time and made sure he got a good lawyer. He got him a lawyer, got him everything that he needed. He talked to the judges and became instrumental in trying to have this boy be taken care of. And then he got all of the Vedanta books for him so he could continue his studies. Now, honestly, I'm so good. It's just so beautiful. So that he continued all of his studies while he was in the prison, you know, and provided him with everything that he needed, and that boy did his time, and then I don't know after that. But that's so beautiful, you know. He was totally present for both, you know. And when somebody has done something like that, you can imagine the trauma of being the perpetrator of something like that. And of course, nobody loves you. You know, you've become like this, you know, except for Swamiji. So those kind of stories are very meaningful to me, you know, for my own antakarana shuddhi, for growing, for having that kind of objectivity and just care for all beings. These kind of things, when you see them, it makes you, it changes everything, you know, it makes you understand something, you know, that person, that boy is suffering too, and now he's done this very guilt-ridden act, very hard to overcome that, and you need somebody to help you. And so, he was there, you know, very beautiful. I think that everybody, of course, the girl is fine. I know her. And it's way like, what, 40 years ago? She's fine, married, has kids, and all's well. And actually, I don't know his story, but he's probably okay too. But so anyway, your upadhi, his upadhi, and the girl's upadhi, and our upadhi, it's not swabhavika. These upadhis and whatever is going on in them, this is not our nature. Our nature is just one non-dual Brahman. And I never go through any type of change, and I am the Adhishtana, the self of all beings. Doesn't matter who the being is, that is yourself. The Atma is yourself. The Upadhis are all different. The Upadhis are all just manifestations of karma, really. Whatever Upadhi you have, you know, it's a manifestation of your prior karmas to fit into this world at this time. These are the karmas that you attract. And it's also not that you have that you every time you die you take a birth right away. You take a birth when you fit in perfectly into that situation with the kind of infinite number of karmas you have. But you could also be an unmanifest condition like deep sleep. You could also be spending time in some of the other lokas, in some of the punya bhumis, you know, and in some of the lower adhama bhumis also. The worlds, these other lokas, you spend some time there exhausting the punya or the papa. It just depends upon the karma. You're traveling, and yet you're not only traveling here. You're traveling all through the whole system. And some of those lokas from the whole Hindu cosmology, you're like, if you were to go to Swarga Loka or to one of the higher lokas, like the Deva Loka, you may be there for many, many centuries from Earth time, you know. Or you may go to one or two lokas above and then just be there for some period, a smaller period of time, and then be reborn. All depends upon the karma, but definitely you will be reborn. But to be reborn in this world with a human body is considered an incredible, very rare punya, to be born as a human being here, because you have to see we are so much in the minority. If you think of, you know, all of the fish, all of the living creatures, all of the insects, all of the underground, you know, rodents, and every creature that exists, including the human beings, you're just a speck in the whole manifestation of upadis here at this time. You know, and so to get a human birth is considered a great punya. And so in the Indian tradition, well, Swamiji will always say, we'll always hear it in one way or another, this is a very rare birth, don't waste it. Don't waste it, you know. Make use of this birth. It's a very, very special birth. It's a punya, tremendous punya. And then to be a mumukshu among these humans is very, very rare and requires crores and crores of punya. And so to be able to get this birth itself is not that easy to do. It's like crores, according as it's praised, it's all praised, but crores and crores and crores of lifetimes of punya to get a birth where your mind has that type of room inside in order to do this inquiry or to even care. What are these people doing sitting here listening to all of this? When, you know, we could be out doing this and doing that, you know. Like my mother, honey, I don't have those kind of problems. Anyways, that's some of the background. So being contained within the Vedic tradition, then all of these devatas in these higher lokas, then we do pujas and rituals to them. Especially if you go way back into really the Vedic culture, and you'll see this in chapter 3 and 4, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, even to eat the food, to eat, you know, we always pray, you know, and we always pray and kind of give thanks to all of the devatas and to Ishwara, because without Varuna, without the devata of the waters, there would be none. Without Surya, without the sun, without the rains, you know, without Prithvi, without the earth, we would have no food. And so to eat without acknowledging or giving gratitude is considered, you're considered in the Bhagavad Gita, you're like a thief. It's like being a thief. You don't have give any acknowledgement, you know, to all those who have worked so hard, all of the devatas that have done so much to make this food possible. And so they all, it's part of your dharma to do those pujas and to do those prayers and things to give proper acknowledgement to all of the parts, to Ishwara and all those parts of the creation that are supporting you, you know. And so also from the standpoint of a mumukshu, it ties you in to Ishwara. You know, like whenever you do the puja in the morning, that ties you in to Ishwara. When we say our prayers for the food, it ties you in. We're not just here in a concrete world, you know, grabbing some food. There's a relationship. And so all of these prayers and chants that we do and the different pujas that we do are good for us. Okay, done. Because the next verse is a beautiful verse, I'll probably spend the whole class on it.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harih Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harih Om.
Oh, two things.